Good morning, and welcome to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I'll explain why these things are happening. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through His Torah, which means teaching, not law, and by way of His covenant. If you are rational, this will be the best part of today's program. Our phone number, should you want to engage in our discussion, question, criticize, or affirm something I have to say, is 877-300-7645. Now, on to the news. Last night on 60 Minutes, Bob Schieffer lobbed new vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney a series of underhand softballs. I don't think I have ever witnessed an interview on 60 Minutes that was designed to be more comfortable for those being interviewed or easier for those being interviewed. It was as if Bob Schieffer wrote a letter to the Republican National Committee and said, what questions would be the easiest for these two guys to answer? What environment should I set them in so they're the most comfortable? And how should I approach this so they come off as credible, likable, and electable as possible? And yet, they didn't. It was horrible. Now, as I was sharing with Scott, my producer, prior to the program, those who have listened to this program know that I'm anti-political. I used to be a conservative Republican, and now I'm opposed to both parties. In fact, I have come to recognize that if you are a conservative and you vote for the Republican candidate, you are probably going to find, if history is our best guide, that they will outspend the Democratic candidate during Republican administrations. Our debt skyrockets even more than it does during Democratic administrations. In this prior election, I had thought that Obama would be the lesser of two evils against John McCain, primarily because neither man had any business experience, and so that was a non-issue. And I thought that John McCain would be too much of a hawk and keep us engaged in winless, counterproductive wars, and that, therefore, Obama would have been slightly better than John McCain, the lesser of the two evils. I did not vote. In fact, I encouraged everyone who I could influence not to vote. In this particular election, I will do the same. I will say my strong admonition to you is not to participate. Do not associate your name with the lesser of two evils. In this particular election, though, there are two issues. One is the economy again, and this time we actually have somebody that has participated in the free enterprise system against someone who hasn't worked a day in his life for any business, much less run a business. So that seems fairly clear-cut that Romney would be a better choice than Obama. As for dealing with the world of Islam, the terrorist threat to America, once again, I think Romney would be better than Obama. But I will not support either of them. In fact, on the religious side, you've got a guy that sat in the pews of Reverend Wright, who was a raging anti-Semite, versus a guy not smart enough to recognize that Mormonism is an utter and complete fraud. Well, last night, as Bob Schieffer lobbed underhand pitches to the two, neither one could answer the most obvious questions. I mean, if the questions that you would most hope you would be asked, they could not answer any of them. Now, at first, when I realized that Mitt Romney had picked the Congressional Budget Committee chairman, that you would think that at that point that he would be completely outmatched in terms of that Paul Ryan would know so much more about the fiscal issues of our national economy than did his running mate. But that wasn't the case. The first underhand pitch was on issues related to capital gains and how sometimes wealthier people pay a lesser rate than poorer people. And rather than explain the purpose of capital gains and why there is a capital gains rate that is distinct from ordinary income and why Democrats throughout the ages have also recognized that having a lower capital gains rate is absolutely essential to the economy. And should it be eliminated, you will absolutely destroy the economy. They didn't even mention what capital gains represents. Hey, folks, if you don't understand capital gains, you aren't smart enough to be voting. You ought not vote. If you can't present the benefits of capital gains, which is you invest in businesses, you invest in assets that over time, so you're investing in the economy, and if that investment turns out to be productive and over a longer period of time, you then sell that investment for a profit, you're taxed at a lesser rate to encourage people to invest in the economy. That's the nature of capital gains. Not difficult to understand. But if you don't understand it, don't engage in politics. Go ahead, Scott.
It's your stocks, your bonds, your real estate, and things like that, right?
If you hold them for a prolonged period of time, then investing in companies through their stock would be an example of capital gains, as well as investing in them through their bonds. But so would you start a business and you build that business, and if you're successful enough and you're able to sell some or all of that business, that would be capital gains. It's not ordinary income. Ordinary income is what you're paid to do a job. And so it is essential for the economy. These guys couldn't handle it. And they didn't bother to say that, because they had another question on the percentage of taxes paid by the wealthiest Americans. It is an extraordinarily easy thing to answer. The top 10% of Americans pay 71%. Of the federal taxes. The top 10% pay 71% of the taxes. They only earn 43% of the income, and they pay twice as much as the average American. This myth that the top wage earners don't pay their fair share is only true if you don't think it is fair that they outpay the rest of America by many, many, many times. They're overly burdened as opposed to underburdened. You know what percentage the bottom 50% of Americans pay in of the overall federal taxes, Scott?
It's less than 50%.
Oh yeah, it's a lot less than 50. Talk about, how about 2%?
Yeah,
50% of Americans pay 2% of the total taxes. You know that 49% of those filing federal tax returns pay nothing. They're actually beneficiaries of government indulgences. Our tax code has become so lopsided, so upside down. At this point, you've got 10% carrying 71% of the load and 50% jumping in the cart, riding along for free. And so you've got a majority of Americans now who make essentially no contribution to the government, dictating how those who are productive ought to have their money confiscated from them. And you wonder why we have a bankrupt economy, why this country is grotesquely in debt. And neither of these two guys could explain any of this. If they had simply cited the facts. But you know what they did instead? They said, oh, no, we intend to have the wealthiest, the most productive Americans continue to pay the same amount of taxes. We don't want to lower the taxes on them at all. We want, in fact, what we're going to do is we're going to lower the taxes on the middle class. No, you can't lower the taxes on the middle class. They don't pay any tax. And the poorest Americans pay absolutely nothing. They're net beneficiaries. And the great middle of the nation is paying a whopping 2%. What are you going to do to lower that? It is so astonishingly bad that here's a guy on the Congressional Budget Committee, and he couldn't answer these questions. Then the next issue was that they were talking about, you know, why would you be better than Obama? And the obvious answer is that because they were talking about Bain Capital and the ads that Obama has run against Bain Capital, and I've said in a previous program, that if you're dumb enough to have that ad campaign, which Obama spent hundreds of millions of dollars on, that because Mitt Romney founded and ran Bain Capital, which salvaged many businesses and actually created jobs, but was a business of building businesses. Because he ran Bain Capital, he's not qualified to be your president, was the theme of the ads. And if you're dumb enough to fall for that, you ought not vote. And these guys were given the ability to explain why that is the case. And they couldn't do it. They couldn't explain that maybe our biggest issue today is our economy. Wouldn't you rather have somebody manage the national economy that's actually built a business, run a business, been involved in business, as opposed to a guy that has never worked one day in his life in a business?
To be fair, I mean, you're assuming these guys are smart. I mean, they did choose to go into politics. I mean, a lot of smart people don't go into politics.
I guess I'm not assuming they're smart. I view politics as the arena of egos. It is the place where those who are who have large egos go to be loved, to seek power, to seek influence, as opposed to the best and the brightest in terms of intelligence. Even on the issues of Medicare and Social Security, these two guys have all this rhetoric of how they want to bring America back, that they're here to resolve this this mounting deficit that we have as a country, and that the deficit is grotesquely immoral. And then they speak both of Medicare and Social Security, saying that what they wish to do is to make those programs larger, more in keeping with the people's needs, that they're not going to make any cuts to either of those programs. And you say, wait a minute. Yeah, those two programs are the largest and second largest aspect of the deficit. And not only are they the biggest contributors to the $15 trillion current deficit, and the biggest reason that we're adding $1 trillion a year to that deficit, the unfunded mandates associated with Medicare and with Social Security are 10 times larger than the deficits themselves. Well, it was an astonishing experience. If you missed the interview, you didn't miss anything. But goodness gracious, is that the best we can do in terms of those seeking to hold the highest office in the land? This is Yana. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back after a moment. 877-300-7645. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. Again, if you'd like to engage in this conversation, 877-300-7645. Now, just as a slice of reality, Scott and I were talking during the break about the fact that politicians do what's in the interest of politicians, not what is in the interest of the country. The reality is what's in the interest of the country would be to reduce the size of the federal government and even state governments by somewhere in the range of 90%. If we were to reduce the size of the U.S. military by about 90%, so that we cut Social Security, Medicare, which are the two largest budget items, the third biggest budget item being the military, if we were to cut them all by 90% and stop squandering people's money so that they had money to buy things and to invest in the economy, we would be the most prosperous nation on earth. There would be no recession whatsoever. And yet, we do the opposite. And we continue to exacerbate the problem. There is a 0% possibility that the clowns who are running for office are going to reverse the trend that we are engaged in, and therefore the answer is the country cannot be saved. That's why I say don't bother to invest and engage in politics. The country cannot be saved. We are too far down the road with our fiat money, with our Federal Reserve, with our $15 trillion in deficit, with our government that has so regulated business that business virtually can no longer perform, so far down the road on trade deficits, so far down the road in indoctrinating our children in political correctness, that there are too many things that would have to change for us to recover, and there isn't any politician willing to change any of the 100 things that would have to change, not only simultaneously, but to an extent that most people couldn't even fathom. And this is why I say you're far better off focusing on what can you do to save yourself from this collapse? What can you do to save your family? What can you do to save those who are willing to listen to the only offer of hope that is reliable in the midst of this death spiral that our nation and so many other nations are in? And that is the purpose of this program. You know, the first hour, we're going to expose and condemn religion and politics, military and economic schemes, so that you understand there is no hope in these things. It's why God asked us to walk away from them. And then in the second half of the program, we will focus on what Yah is offering us, which is the only reliable solution. In the beginning of this program, in the news, there was a misstatement. Now, it's not criticizing Genesis Communication News. That misstatement was in every media outlet that I considered this morning. It talked about Mohamed Morsi, the new president of Egypt, being bold and firing the generals as it relates to the debacle in the Sinai, where the Sinai has become a war zone of jihadists, which is totally and completely in opposition to the Camp David Accords, which says that the Sinai cannot be a militaristic zone and that Egypt has the responsibility, but with Israel's supervision, to keep the Sinai weapons free and jihadist free and military free. And yet jihadists in the Sinai went off and killed a score or more Egyptian military leaders, while all the little Egyptian people were saying, why don't they go off and kill Jews as opposed to their own military? And Morsi, who is a pro-jihadist candidate, then went in and made it sound like he was turning Egypt's military against the fundamentalist Muslim jihadists, and then yesterday firing a number of generals and usurping power for himself. Now, the reality is that's not possible. The generals and the Supreme Court totally and completely control Egypt. Morsi has no power whatsoever. So the only way for there to have been military leaders step down is because the rank and file of generals and Morsi had to come together and say, I'll tell you what, we got a real mess here. This is a complete and unmitigated disaster, and we need a way out. We'll have some token resignations and some token recognition of your power as a way out of this mess. But the generals had to decide to do this on their own, as opposed to independently. And by the way, one of the generals that got the axe was the general that was closest to the United States. America's primary liaison to Egypt is no longer empowered. Well, we return to Shattering Myths after the break. Our number is 877-300-7645. I am your host, Yada. We're going to return to the firing of a Joint Forces Staff College professor. To Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. Next, we're going to combine politics with a little religion and some military schemes, all in one statement. This one was recorded by the Washington Times. A professor at the Joint Forces Staff College was relieved of duty in June for uttering the hearsay that the United States is at war with Islam. The Obama administration contended that the professor had to be relieved because what he was teaching was not U.S. policy. Because there is no disclaimer attached to the small wars piece, it is fair to ask, at least in this, in Colonel Benson's case, whether his views reflect official policy regarding the use of the U.S. military force against American citizens. So here we are in America. We're supposed to be, our military is protecting our freedoms. And yet, if a professor correctly says that Islam is at war with the United States and what we're doing is fighting fundamentalist Muslims, you can't say that because you can only teach in America that which is official U.S. policy. You know that in the U.S. military, the Prophet of Doom, which is the most comprehensive presentation of the Islamic scriptures ever written, it's the one of only two attempts that have taken the Quran, which is a jumbled mess, no context, no chronology, and taken the Quran and put it into chronological order, set it into the context of Muhammad's life, using the history of Islam's formation by Tabari and the Sirah, which is the biography of Muhammad collected by Ishaq. And that book, I've had hundreds of letters from those in the intelligence offices of the United States and even in military intelligence saying it's the single most effective book ever written to explain the nature of Islam and why jihadists are killing us. That book is banned by the U.S. military. That access to Prophet of Doom, the most helpful site in the world in terms of understanding this foe that is killing us and why they're killing us and how you could stop them from killing us, is banned by the U.S. military. You see, the U.S. government is very quickly getting to the position where the only thing that you'll be able to talk about is that which is official U.S. policy. Here somebody tells the truth, and they're fired for it. The truth is not an alibi in America anymore. As a consequence of keeping America stupid, Americans continue to die in Afghanistan. Three U.S. soldiers have been killed and one injured by a gunman wearing a uniform paid for by the U.S. government. In the Helmand province, NATO said, two separate gun attacks on NATO-led troops in South Afghanistan have left a total of six U.S. soldiers dead. In the first, an Afghan employed by NATO shot all three soldiers, all from the U.S., at a base in Helmand province on Friday evening. Earlier the same day, also in Helmand, an Afghan police officer shot three U.S. Marines to death after inviting them to dinner at a checkpoint. Hey, come have dinner with me. Oh, excuse me while I blow your brains out. The killing of two British soldiers in Helmand was also announced on Friday, bringing to eight the number of coalition soldiers killed in the Helmand province in 48 hours. For what? For nothing. The very people that America and Great Britain are paying salaries to, providing uniforms for, giving guns to, providing the bullets to those guns, used the access provided by those uniforms, the guns and the bullets therein, to kill those who gave them to them. And we think that there is hope in this situation in Afghanistan, that we ought to stay the course for what? Of course, the increase in killings here recently is because of Ramadan. You get bonus points with Allah when you kill infidels during Ramadan. This next statement is, okay, you've really got your pulse on the situation. It says, there is mounting concerns over attacks on NATO troops by their Afghan allies. Yeah, when your allies are killing you with the very weapons that you have provided to them, chances are you have a problem. Members of the Afghan security forces have killed 34 international coalition soldiers this year. That means 34 Americans and Brits, because that's the extent of the coalition these days, in 26 separate incidences. Afghan officials told the BBC in Kabul that the gunman was a rogue Afghan policeman who had opened fire. In Friday's other shootings, the police commander killed three Marines as they ate before dawn in observance of the Muslim fasting season. Journalists couldn't even say Ramadan. Taliban spokesman Qadi Yusuf Ahmadi told the AP by telephone that the attacker had joined the insurgency after the shooting. You know, I think it's funny that the AP has better access to the Taliban than do the NATO forces. And what I think is perhaps the most deadly news, the most destructive news, the most bewildering news of the day, we'll have to turn to Turkey. Mrs. Clinton, Hillary Rotten Clinton, told reporters that she and her Turkish counterpart, Ahmet Davutoğlu, had discussed how to support the opposition in Syria in its, quote, efforts to end the violence and begin the transition to a free, democratic Syria without Assad. So once again, America has committed its efforts to rid a nation of a dictator and turn over that nation to the mob of religious fanatics that want him gone. Quote, our number one goal is to hasten the end of the bloodshed and the Assad regime. Now, you would have thought that after we had failed so miserably in Iraq, taking out a secular dictator and replacing that secular dictator with a government now controlled by the mullahs in Tehran, that that blunder of cataclysmic consequences would have been enough to tell us we ought not to do this. We make bad situations worse. Or that that going into Afghanistan and replacing the Taliban with the unbelievably corrupt Karzai regime, which will be run out of Dodge the moment we leave, replaced again by the Taliban, just with lots of people dead in the process, that suicidal mission where we pushed the fundamentalist Muslims out of Afghanistan and into Pakistan, where they have destabilized a country with nuclear weapons and a suicidal move, that ought to have been enough to tell us we ought not engage in this. We make bad situations worse, especially for America, making America less safe. After having witnessed siding with the Mujahideen, the jihadists, the fundamentalist Muslims who had fought in Afghanistan against us, this time arming them and helping them take over Libya, that we ought to have realized that was stupid. When we watched fundamentalist Muslims take control of Tunisia and then Egypt, that we say, you know, something tells us that our choices here are very bad and much, much worse. And we ought not commit our military to the side of much, much worse. So, you gotta wonder where along the way these political buffoons are going to continue to make these kinds of blunders and engage the United States in this kind of war. And in this particular case, it is far worse. Let me read one more quote from our Secretary of State. Our intelligence services are military, have very important responsibilities and roles to play, and we're going to be setting up a working group to do just that. The Secretary of State of the United States just said that our intelligence services and our military have very important responsibilities and roles to play in Syria. Now, so you'd have to come to understand that the people that are running the United States can't be absolutely stupid. And yet, in the immediate wake of witnessing the disaster of Iraq and Afghanistan, to commit the U.S. military to Syria is suicidal. And so the real question is, are they doing it because they know it's suicidal and are working directly against the interests of the American people? And do they have an agenda that is destructive to the American people? Are they just blundering fools? Those are your choices. You know, in Syria, it's more the fact that the Sunnis who are rising up against Assad are fundamentalist Muslim mujahideen, jihadist types, and many of them are crossing the border out of Iraq to play jihad in Syria. It's beyond the fact that this is Sunni, Saudi Arabian armed goons who are Wahhabists, fundamentalist Salaf Muslims, getting their chance to go and wage jihad against Shia Muslims. It's beyond the fact that this is a proxy war of the two strains of Islam that we put in conflict with one another in Syria because of our stupid invasion of Iraq. It's more than that. In this particular case, because Russia and China are economically linked with Iran, they have to support Syria, which is now an Iranian client because of America's foolish invasion of Iraq. And because of that, when the United States says, we are now going to engage, you don't just have Saudi Arabia and Iran warring through proxies. Now you've got Russia, who has troops on the ground, and the United States warring through proxies. I mean, this is the very kind of thing that foolishly brings nations to world war. And that is what the United States has just committed its intelligence services and its military to do. I am stunned. I am saddened for my country that we as a nation, 10 years after 9/11, still know so little about Islam collectively that we're willing to engage in this kind of suicidal blunder. But nonetheless, I'm tired blaming the U.S. government for acting so foolishly, because the real blame is the American people themselves, the very people who elected them. And even this article said, the U.S. has concerns about the growing number of Al-Qaeda-linked militants that are fighting alongside the rebels in Syria. Our allies, once again. This is Yana with Shattering Myths, back after the break, 877-300-7645. Segment of the first hour of Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada, 877-300-7645. We did, in all honesty, just shoo away a caller who, once again, wanted to talk about his belief that Muhammad was not a pedophile. I will, in a future program, address an email that became long and convoluted regarding a defense of Muhammad and allegedly a rebuttal to Prophet of Doom. I'm going to do it not because they bring up any valid points, but because it exposes what religion does to people's ability to evaluate evidence and to act rationally. My last story here today is related, Kabul, Afghanistan. I'm just going to read this to you because it is it speaks for itself. When she refused to prostitute herself or have sex with the man she was forced to marry when she was 13 years old, officials said that Shahar girl's in-laws tortured her, and they threw her into a dirty, windowless cellar for months until the police discovered her lying in the hay and animal dung. In July, an appeals court upheld prison sentences of 10 years for each of the three of her in-laws, a decision heralded as a legal triumph underscoring the advances for women's rights in the past decade. She is recovering from her wounds, physical and emotional, in a woman's shelter in Kabul. By the way, everyone thus far in Afghanistan who has been convicted of torturing women has been released by this government. All the government has to do is receive the suitable bribe, and the perpetrator is released. Muhammad, to give Shahar Gul up for marriage, decided to because his wife didn't like the 13-year-old around, was contacted by a man who was in his mid-30s, and even though she had not reached the legal age of marriage, which is 15 with dad's consent, she was sold essentially as a slave to this man. In effect, This man, it says that Ghulam Saki bought her. He paid at least $5,000. Life isn't worth much in Islam, particularly if you're a girl, according to the government's official prosecutors. He drove off with Shahar Gould to his parents' home and in a northern province of Afghanistan. Ghulam Shaki's first wife had fled after he and his mother had beat her nearly to death for not bearing children. According to Zafiri, the chairman of the Women's Affairs Department and the mullah of the mosque in the local town. In his search for a new wife, there may have been reason for that the family looked so far afield, because the first thing that he wanted to do was to make a return on his investment of $5,000, and he forced her, like he had his previous wife, into prostitution. A 13-year-old forced prostitute, allegedly one's wife, according to the trial transcripts. The girl was immediately put to work cooking and cleaning, but she was unable to resist serving as a prostitute. Go ahead, Scott.
It sounds like an extremely nice guy.
Oh, it's what people don't recognize is that this is pervasive in the Islamic world. And it's pervasive in the Islamic world because women have no value in the Islamic world. Muhammad hated women. You know, you might say, how could he hate women and have a harem? How could he hate women and marry when he's 50 years old, a 6-year-old girl? Why could he have, you know, his first mosque was nothing but an open area around these little apartments that he had for all of his wives and concubines? How in the world was it possible for a man that hated women to have surrounded himself with so many women? Because he could control them, because he could force them to have sex with him. That's why he raped three Jewish women. Three Jewish women after he killed their husbands, after he robbed the people of all of their property, after he sold the children into slavery. Muhammad raped the women of those he had killed. He hated women. Muhammad, in his farewell sermon, said that what was done to this girl was legal. He said that men can lock women in closets like this. He can starve them, which he did to this woman. They could beat them. That is the realm of women in Islam. It's a wonder to me that we think that when a fundamentalist Islamic government takes over, and it was democratically elected because the imams told people to vote that way, that we have somehow done something good when we have perpetrated this kind of hell upon the victims in that culture. Well, this girl was tricked into taking sedatives, which she was told were medicines, so that she could more effectively serve as a prostitute.
Farmers keep their livestock lean and healthy with a mineral-rich diet. Before market, they cut off minerals, leaving them to crave high-calorie grains. If weight control is this easy, why prescribe surgery for humans? Avoid 9...